the one critical element in any community is, you know, what they already have, their existing assets, things like historic buildings, downtowns, recreational assets, educational institutions like Illinois State University, et cetera.
What's the difference between placemaking and capitalizing on the place that already exists, or is there a difference?
Well, I think placemaking is about taking a place that doesn't really have an identity and giving it an identity. But a lot of places, you know, really have a unique sense of place, and they've been, you know, haven't really thought about how to retain it, how to maintain it, how to enhance it, how to make it more attractive. And so in many places, you know, for years, communities were losing their sense of place. I mean, if I were to take you up in an airplane tomorrow morning and then simply suddenly drop you along a road outside of most American cities, you wouldn't have any idea where you were because it all looks exactly the same. And so once again, one of the things that's become critical in economic development today is this idea of community differentiation. And it's true, you know, with respect to you, if you can't differentiate your product, your project, your community from anybody else, you just simply won't have any competitive advantage.
But this is more than branding and marketing, though.
Absolutely. It's really looking at your assets and then building all your future plans, whether it's an economic development plan, a land use plan, a tourism plan, whatever, around the enhancement of your existing assets. Just take tourism for a second. You know, tourism's the biggest industry in the world, and it's the first, second, or third largest industry in every single American state. But the truth is, the more any community comes to be just exactly like every place else, the less reason there is to visit. On the other hand, the more a community does to enhance its uniqueness, whether that's architectural or artistic or cultural or whatever, the more reason there is to visit. So it's all about this idea of really focusing on what you do have and enhancing and growing and building on those assets.
Both Bloomington and Normal have taken baby steps to really focus on Route 66, which comes through Bloomington Normal. That would be a good step.
Absolutely. And you know, Route 66 is an iconic road. It's the kind of place where people will really travel a long way just to be part of that. You know, it's interesting, in some parts of the country, they've really taken Route 66 and made it be sort of the centerpiece of a community revitalization effort.
And how does placemaking intersect with economic development?
Place is more than a spot on a map. Place is really what, you know, first of all, makes, you know, your hometown different from my hometown, but more importantly, sense of place is explicitly that which makes our physical surroundings worth caring about. And, you know, there's a big foundation called the Knight Foundation that grew out of the Knight Ridder newspapers, and they did a study about 4 years ago called the Soul of the City Study, and they found that communities had the greatest attachment to place had the strongest economies. And so, you know, if you don't, and what was it that attached people to place? Well, it was the physical character of the place. It was how welcoming they were to newcomers. It was whether they had places, public places to gather, like a downtown. And one of the things we figured out is that downtowns are important because they're the heart and soul of any community. If you don't have a healthy downtown, you simply don't have a healthy city or town.
Well, let's talk about malls for a moment, because malls generally are not downtown. They're on the periphery of the community or maybe further away from the downtown city center. We've had one mall morph into an outdoor lifestyle center that sort of mimics a downtown. It looks like it's doing fairly well, but it's lost its anchor. The more traditional mall, it's lost two anchors, Macy's and JCPenney. Do malls suffer from a lack of placemaking? Is that part of it?
Well, commercial development is changing for lots of reasons, the internet, et cetera. But there are many studies that will show that the average amount of time that an American spends at an enclosed mall or even a strip shopping center has gone down for years. People go to buy what they want and they leave. You know, there's a concept in the real estate world that we call it the place-making dividend. And that simply means people stay longer, come back more often, and spend more money in places that attract their affection.
And well, who's affectionate about a mall?
Yeah, exactly right. You know, who wants to go to the strip center to hang out? People just go on to buy what they want and they leave. But people will go downtowns of America and they will hang out and they will come back. And, you know, that was our model for development in this country for about 300 years. We called it a town. And then we just sort of forgot about that. And we just sort of started segregating all the uses, required us to drive everywhere for every single thing. And every place started to look exactly the same. Now we're discovering that the small towns and beautiful neighborhoods of our cities aren't just a charming anachronism. They're actually a model for how we could build in the future.
city leaders are pledging to help the mall. How do they do that?
Well, you know, malls are facing a lot of competition from the internet, and there many malls are losing their anchor stores. Most of the strongest malls in every market will, I think, survive and will do well. But the way they can help a mall, for example, is to think about, well, what are people spending things on today? So in many places, the anchor stores, like the Macy's of the world, are being replaced with restaurants and food service things. Because as one developer said to me not too long ago, you know, you can't eat online. And so, you know, when do you go to the, you know, a department store? Well, you might go buy a piece of furniture once every 5 or 10 years. You might go buy new clothes maybe every couple of months, but you eat 3 times a day. So what's becoming more important in the world of commercial real estate development and malls is food and other kinds of services.
Both Uptown Normal and Downtown Bloomington are working on redevelopment efforts for their downtowns. How do cities and towns find success with big and small redevelopment projects? And is it all centered on sort of making sure you're capitalizing on that sense of place?
Well, I'd say another thing we've learned about economic development is successful economic development and successful community revitalization is rarely about the one big thing. It's much more frequently about lots of small things working synergistically together off of a plan that makes sense for that community. Too many cities have put all their eggs in one basket, you know, whether it's the, you know, a casino or a convention center or, you know, or an aquarium. I mean, I'll never forget, even say a city like Camden, New Jersey said, if we could just build an aquarium featuring the fish of New Jersey, then we could save Camden. Well, they did build that aquarium, and it's a lovely aquarium. But did it save Camden? No, it did not. Because, as I said before, you know, successful community revitalization is rarely about the one big thing. I mean, one of the things that I think that every city needs, and there's actually a supply-demand imbalance, is more in-town housing. And the reason I say that is because we built housing for, you know, 25 years in America, like every single family was the Waltons, the mom, the dad, the two kids, and the dog. And today, only 25% of all American households are, you know, the mom, the dad, the two kids, and the dog. And so all the housing was being built for a minority of the marketplace. So what about housing for retirees or empty nesters or unrelated singles living together or young professionals? And so this is why so many communities are actually finding that putting housing back in the middle of the community is one of the keys to community revitalization.
And that's a big part of the Uptown Normal plan, is to add more density, more housing in Uptown.
It's not just about density. It's really about this idea of mixing uses and walkable communities. I'll tell you a little story. I was went on a tour last year of Bentonville and Fayetteville, Arkansas. Bentonville, of course, is the sort of the icon of American suburbia, the world headquarters for Walmart. They are, in fact, spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to turn Bentonville into a walkable mixed-use place. And Fayetteville, interestingly, we were driving down the interstate from Bentonville, and there was a Waffle House right off of the exit to the interstate. And of course, everybody's seen a Waffle House off of an interstate exit, and I didn't pay any attention to that till I got into downtown Fayetteville, and there was another Waffle House, a brand new one in a 4-story building with 3 floors of housing on top of the Waffle House. And there was no parking in front of that Waffle House except on-street parking. I thought, that's interesting. I've never seen a Waffle House with housing on top. So I went over to the city hall and found the city planner and said, could you tell me about that Waffle House? And they said, sure, we've already done a study about that. Turns out the downtown Waffle House is, you know, performing 20% better than the one out on the highway. But more importantly, and this is really the secret, you know, it's producing more taxes per acre, more jobs per acre. It has more residents per acre. There are 31 people who live upstairs above the downtown Waffle House. Nobody lives upstairs above the Waffle House out on the highway. And by the way, if you're eating a lot of waffles, you probably need a walk after you've gone to the restaurant.
or get on a bike.
So you know, it's the future belongs to mixed-use development because it's outperforming the old kind of single-use drive everywhere for everything kind of development.
You talked about the one big thing that people wanted to bring to downtown. Downtown Bloomington brought a Coliseum, but there's no place for people to stay in downtown Bloomington. And one of the efforts of our mayor has been to try to attract a downtown hotel, some sort of anchor. At this point, the discussion has been about a hotel. What are your thoughts about hotels in downtown areas, especially if it's adjacent to or near a Coliseum? Yeah.
Well, the lodging industry is really changing. And it's changing because the people who stay in hotels are changing. And, you know, a study done by the Marriott Corporation, for example, found that for young people, in particular the millennial generation, that authenticity and interesting were more important than comfortable and predictable in the lodging world. So, for example, there's an old saying about Holiday Inns. The best thing about Holiday Inn is no surprises. The worst thing about Holiday Inn is no surprises. And so what's happening is every hotel chain is now starting to build hotels in restored historic buildings. And you're seeing everything from old factories to warehouses to a new mortuary built, being turned into lodging facilities and hotels. And almost all of them are in the middle of a downtown, and they're in a building with character. We do a study every year called Emerging Trends in Real Estate, and we found last year, just to give you an example of how the real estate world is changing, that restored industrial space for offices is now commanding higher rents than new Class A office space. Why? Well, because creative class employers like to be in buildings with character.
What is Marriott doing with that information that they've learned through their survey?
Well, Marriott predicts that within the next year, about 25% of their new Courtyard Marriott hotels will be in restored historic buildings in downtowns.
So we could see one in downtown Bloomington.
Could be.
Possibility. Ed McMahon is a senior resident fellow with the Urban Land Institute. He's addressing the McLean County Regional Planning Commission's 12th Annual Information Forum. You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Both communities, both Bloomington and Normal, adopted complete streets policies last year. How important is this, and how important is it for both communities to follow those policies?
Well, the whole idea behind complete streets is that streets are for everybody. They're not just for cars. They're for pedestrians. They're for cyclists. They're really for everybody. And, you know, as it turns out that, you know, there are literally dozens of studies now that show that communities that are walkable or bikeable actually are more valuable than communities that are drive-only. In fact, there's something called the walk score, and we found that for every one-point increase in walk score, wherever, depending on where you live in the U.S., your value, your property values will go up anywhere from $700 to $3,000 per walk score point. And it turns out that if you live in a walkable neighborhood, for example, a neighborhood with blocks, people just simply walk more, as opposed to a neighborhood with cul-de-sacs and dead-end streets, because nobody just wants to walk up to the end of the cul-de-sac and back and up and back. But people will go for a walk around the block. And it's not because anybody's making them. It's because the healthy choice is simply the easy choice, the default choice, the choice you don't even have to think about.
This is a way to get people to that place. Walking and biking, if they're able to get there by walking or biking, studies show they return more often.
That's right. And they're the kind of place that people like. You know, we did a study of sidewalk cafes in Philadelphia, and in 1990, there were no sidewalk cafes in Philadelphia. Today, there are 4,400 outdoor tables in Center City, Philadelphia. And by the way, Center City of Philadelphia is now the fastest growing zip code in the entire state of Pennsylvania. Walkability equals profitability.
You're one of the three contributing authors to the 2015 report, Active Transportation and Real Estate, The Next Frontier. What's it going to take to get people on bikes in a community so they can get to those places?
Well, the biggest determinant for how many people bike is it's not weather, it's not topography, it's not culture. It's basically a fear of being hit by a car. But when you build, you know, stress-free or low-stress bikeway networks, people start to ride bikes. I've traveled all over the United States, and I'd go into a community, and somebody will say to me, well, no one in our community will ride a bike. And my answer is always, well, nobody will ride a bike if there's no place to ride the bike. And communities that actually have invested in bicycle infrastructure are now the places where bicycling is growing the fastest.
Can you compare the cost to provide that infrastructure versus the return on that investment?
Yeah, well, you know, this is an important point because, you know, we've spent about $5 trillion on our interstate highway system since its inception. And you know, investment in roads and highways led to auto-oriented development. And then we started building transit, and we got transit-oriented development. And now we have a new phenomenon. It's called trail-oriented development. And we're finding all over the United States, Minneapolis is a great example. They have something called America's First Bicycle Freeway there, where they have 13 new apartment buildings built adjacent to that bike trail with ramps going down into it. And basically, what their cities are finding is that they get an incredible return on their investment. Another example, Dare County, North Carolina, that's the Outer Banks, spent $6.5 million building a bike trail parallel to the beach. And what they've found is that when people go on vacation, they like to get out of their cars. And so they're claiming that they're receiving a 9-to-1 annual return on their $6.5 million investment. So bicycle infrastructure, it doesn't cost you a lot, but it gives you a big bang for the buck.
So there are about 50 miles of trail in this community. Not all of it's contiguous. But there's only one instance of what I would call trail-oriented development where the development's not facing away from the trail. What can you do to get people to realize that there's a whole nother customer base on the other side, on the backside right now, of some of these businesses?
Well, nothing succeeds like success. And so, you know, whenever I would simply get people in put them in a van and take them to another city that's actually done this, like Carmel, Indiana, the fastest growing suburb in the state of Indiana outside of Indianapolis. They've got trail oriented development everywhere you look along what's called the Monon Trail. It's because they found that people will pay more to live next to trails. And in fact, what's the most popular form of outdoor recreation in America? Walking for pleasure. And bicycling's right up at the top as well.
The town of Normal just dipped its toe into the bicycle sharing arena. That shouldn't come as a surprise based on how quickly it's growing worldwide. What do you think accounts for that sharp growth in these kinds of programs?
Well, you know, the world is changing really rapidly. And in the year 2002, in the whole world, we only had 7 bike share programs. Now we have over 800. In 2002, in the United States, we didn't have any bike share programs. Now there's over 120. And it's because people really, particularly young people, they're less interested in ownership than they are in mobility, the ability to move around an area. So all of the sort of the sharing economy, whether it's, you know, Uber or Lyft or bike share or car share alone is growing at the rate of 32% a year in the United States. Because what's it cost to own a car? Well, on average, about $9,000 a year. Own a SUV is about $11,300 a year. So if you're a young person, that's a lot of money you could put into housing or travel or something else that you cared about. So just making it easier to move around a community is a way to actually put more money in your pocket.
As you look at trends, as it concerns active transportation and real estate development and placemaking, economic development, are you optimistic about American cities and towns?
Yes. The development paradigm is changing in America, and it's changing for the better. Cities and towns are coming back to life all over the country. But, you know, the truth is that small-town America, 2/3 of all small towns are losing population. And they're losing population because they're not paying attention to where the world is going. I mean, you know, I understand people don't like change, but there's only 2 kinds of change in the world we live in today. There's planned change and there's unplanned change. And I can tell you that unplanned change will simply destroy every single thing you love about the place you live. So a community can anticipate changes and prepare for them and shape and direct them in a way that they like, or they can just let it happen. And the communities that are being the unsuccessful communities are the ones that are just letting it happen.
Okay. Ed McMahon, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thanks for having me.